We're in chapter 15, and which is on page 40, which is continuing the wrap-up chapters 14, 15, 16, 17, sort of like tying all the loose strings as to the ideas of what it means to be a Beinoni. Now, given the information that we have, that a Beinoni is constantly waging war with his Yetzer, with his animal soul, with Nefesh HaBehemis. And it's interesting to note, someone pointed out to me a deal that the Alter Rebbe makes, that he doesn't say that we're waging war necessarily with the Yetzer. He does say it at the times, you know, Mohammed HaYetzer, this type of thing, but mostly it's Nefesh HaLakis versus Nefesh HaBehemis. So it's not because Yetzer has a negative connotation, whereas Nefesh HaBehemis is this, you know, cute, fuzzy thing. So that
I've never seen mine as a cute fuzzy thing, I'm sorry.
The Nefesh HaBehemis is this emotional thing that really likes, you know, just likes the creature comforts, and isn't really just a bad thing, just like a cow isn't a bad thing, it's just a cow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So corn one.
Yeah, okay. A bull is not a bad thing. A bull is a bull. I mean, you know, so they act like a bull. What do you want? I mean, exactly. You know, so given this information, based on a rule that there is nothing, there's no repetition in Chumash. Everything that is in the Chumash and the entire Tanakh is there for a reason and is not saying something that you could learn from something else. If it says it's something else, very often the Gemara will say, what are you quoting me this verse for when I learned that already over here? Meaning, if I learned it over here, I don't need two verses to tell me the same thing.
Correct.
So in this verse you have, he says, look and see that there's a difference between a tzaddik and a rasha, and one who serves God and one who doesn't serve God. So from this verse we know that there's two different things. There's a tzaddik, and the opposite of a tzaddik is a rasha. And then there's a whole nother thing. Someone who serves God and someone who doesn't serve God. Meaning to say that someone who serves God is not a tzaddik because we have the word tzaddik already. And one who doesn't serve God is not a rasha because we have the word rasha already.
Right.
Make sense? So, got it? Let me say it again.
Oh, are you saying...
Yeah, make sense?
I got it.
Okay. Now tell me if you don't, because this is one of the general rules in like learning Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If it says tzaddik, we know tzaddik already. It doesn't have to right. call this. The tzaddik is not called the one who serves God. Yeah, because it says in another place, the one who serves God. So you have a right. tzaddik and you have a person who's called the one who serves God. Right. You have the rasha and then you have another person who's called the one who doesn't serve God. The fact right. that all four of those people are mentioned tells me that they're not synonymous one
so
with the other.
So you can be a rasha and serve God.
If that's what the case may be. Or what does the verse mean?
Or...
Right. Or you can, as the case may be, is you can be one who doesn't serve God and not be a rasha.
And not be a rasha.
That's more
right.
the idea.
Right.
Meaning to say, Shehefresh being Eved Elokim LaTzadik. You have somebody who's called an Eved Elokim, one who serves God.
Right.
And then you have a person who's called a Tzadik. What's the difference? The Eved Elokim Shu Eved Hu Lashin Haiva. The word Eved is present tense. Meaning he's doing it right now. Shehu be'emsa havoda. He's in the middle of working.
I'm engaged.
Yes, he is engaged. What do you call a person who's engaged? Shehu. What's the avoda we're talking about over here? Shehu ha'melchama. And here he's proving me wrong right away. Im ha'yetzahara. That this is the war with the yetzahara. He's gavar alav to dominate over it. Olegarish ma'ira ketana, and to drive it out of the small city, which that's the body. So that the Yetzirah should not be enclosed in the limbs of the body, that right. is the thought, speech, and action that the person is thinking, saying, and doing.
Right.
Because this is really requires a tremendous effort, tremendous work, to war with him constantly, the Hainu Abeinini. So who is the person who is engaged in serving Hashem, from what we've given now in the last three chapters, is the Beinoni.
Right.
Because that's what the Beinoni is for, as we talked about in the last chapter. Okay, the Beinoni's whole thing is to control himself. And the Nefesh of Bahamas, however nice a behemoth you got, as soon as the Nefesh Eloki starts doing what it's doing, so the Nefesh of Bahamas feels cornered, to use your analogy, and it's going to come back roaring back.
Indeed, yes.
Okay? But if you know how to ride the bull, then, you know, hog tie it or whatever they do, steer tie it, you know, calf rope it, whatever analogy we're going to continue with it over here.
Yeah.
So then that's what you have to do. But just because the animal's been tied up doesn't mean it's going to like being tied up. It's going to lie there and say, oh, well, I'm tied up. It's going to come back even stronger and say, I want to get this thing off of me because it's got this thing called preservation.
And they don't ride bulls for more than about
30 seconds.
Yeah. No. An extremely good bull rider goes 12 seconds.
Uh-huh, okay.
There aren't very many of those.
Okay.
Rabbi, is it that like a Beinoni is like an Eved Hashem serving Hashem and a Tzaddik is more of a representative of Hashem?
Look what he says next line.
Oh.
Avod Tzaddik. Tzaddik is nikra Eved Hashem. That's past tense. Mm-hmm. It's not past like he was. It's a past perfect tense.
Right.
B'shem Atayr. This isn't a nickname. K'may Shem Chacham Aimelech. Like you call a person a sage.
Mm-hmm.
For a person to be called a sage, does he have to be saging right now? If there's such a verb, or for a king, does a king have to be like coronated right now?
He's kinging right now.
Yeah, he is kinging right now. But does he have to be coronated right now?
No.
Once he's been made king, he's king. He doesn't have to do anything else to be king.
Yeah.
Shekvay nasa chachamay melech. He already became a sage or a king.
Right.
Kach zeh, so too also the tzaddik. Kvar avid v'gamer legamri avedus amolchamim yitzahara. Im hara, excuse me. He already finished the work. He's not waging any war with the evil. Ad kiva yagar shehu v'yelech lay. Until he has driven it out already, and it's already gone. V'libli chalul b'kirbo, and his heart has a void within it. So he doesn't have a yitzahara. So since he doesn't have a yitzahara, he, the tzaddik, is going to be called the Eina Eved Elokim. Somebody who's not serving Hashem, you might say. No, I'm going to take that back. He's called an Avad Hashem. Okay, why? Because he did it already. He's not actively engaged. So he's not an Avad Hashem, one who is serving Hashem. He's there. The I don't remember who it was. The Ger Hasidim, the Belzer Hasidim. I'm not sure which group it is. Have a story that their second Rebbe, if it was the Ger, it'd be the Chedushi Harim, and I don't know who the second Belzer Rebbe was. That when he became Rebbe, he was like 14 years old.
Mm.
Okay, and so somebody asked a Belzer Chassid, a venerable sage, a big, you know, whatever. How could it possibly be that you are following somebody who's a 14-year-old kid? And you're calling him Rebbe. You're looking up to him. So he gave him an example. There's a guy who's a mountain climber. Okay? And he's decided he's going to take on the hardest mountain. And so he has to prepare, and he has to learn all about the mountain climbing, and he has to prepare the right ropes and prepare all the provisions. And he's up, he's climbing up the sheer face of the rock, and it's like inches at a time, and he finally gets up there, and he sees there's a kid there. So he says to the kid, I did all this prep and all this work to get to this point. How did you get here? So he says, I was born here.
Right.
So the tzaddik, it says that the fact that he has driven out the evil from his heart, and he has a void in his heart. So you have stories of the Rebbe, for example.
Mm.
From his mother, from when he was two, when he was three. And the Rebbe said, I don't know where the Sikha is, but it's been quoted many times, that the Rebbe said, I remember even before my Abshornish. Which that's going back, you're three.
That's pretty healthy memory.
I remember before my Abshornish thinking, what would the world be like with Mashiach? And what can we do to get Mashiach to come?
Oh.
Well, thinking about them before you're three is a good start.
Yeah, that's already
a pretty healthy start. Yeah.
That's what I was doing. That was weird.
Yeah. Right. This is not what you call the average three-year-old. You know, so some people, it's not that they never had to engage in it. David HaMelech says, "Vali bi chal bi kir bi," because he had to work up from the ground and work his way up. Hmm. So that, like it says, maybe, I don't know, I'm not going to start judging him, it might be like, he might have been one of those, like, at the end of chapter 14, that he worked on himself so much that some tzaddik said, okay, we'll cut him some slack, we'll make him a tzaddik too. Yeah. Okay, because the expression is, he had a void from his heart, because he killed his Yetzirah through fasting.
Yeah.
Which means to say, he had Yetzirah, he had problems with his Yetzirah.
Which means he was no slouch.
Okay, which means he knew the he was the first real BT.
David
HaMelech, So the
bumper sticker, if I've ever
David HaMelech was the first BT. Okay,
there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so the
let's put it this way: it says God loved him. Right. And that's a pretty healthy statement.
Yeah. So he had to work on himself, but then you have other tzaddikim that they don't have to work on themselves.
It's interesting because I know a lot of people who, you know, call their little kids, you know, oh, you little tzaddik, and it sounds like maybe that's not such a
it's hopeful. It's better than calling no, adrab.
Really?
Sure. What are you gonna call him, Shmendrik?
No, but you have to earn being a tzaddik. So you're calling a 4-year-old a tzaddik?
Might as well plant the seeds.
No. Okay. I always called my kids chacham.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. You sage, yes.
Well, but they could be if they're walking very quickly. They're a sage of walking. Like, that's a little more realistic.
And my way of remonstrating them was always, someone as smart as you should not have done something like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Correct. You're much smarter than having done such a thing.
I mean, I pick on my kids all the time, but when it comes down to the real thing, it's you're better than this.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're better than this.
So you have people like, there's a story with Meir of Premishlam that when he was an infant, so his father was a Rebbe, and he had some Rebbe came to visit him, and he said, come, I'm going to show you my son. Okay, so the infant is asleep in his crib. Okay, so the father took his tzitzis and started dangling him on the kid's ear. Okay, so the kid in his sleep took his sleeve and pulled it down over his hand and rubbed his ear with his sleeve. He shouldn't scratch his ear with his hand. Hmm. Which would necessitate him washing his hand. Okay, so some people are just like that, you know? That's a tzaddik. That's a person who you can't call an Oved Hashem. But that's not a person who's Eina Oved Hashem. Okay, because we got four different things going on over here. We have the tzaddik, and we have a rasha, we have an Oved Hashem, and one who's Eina Oved. So the Eina Oved is not a rasha. Okay, so we know that the Oved is not a tzaddik. So what's the Eina Oved?
Okay.
So he said, Rabbeinu Yish Gam Ken Shtei Madregas. And the Rabbeinu, you got two levels. Oved Elohim. And then you have another type of Beinoni who's going to be called somebody who doesn't serve Hashem. But he's not a Rasha because he's a Beinoni. We just said you have two different categories of Beinoni. Okay, we're not talking about a Rasha. He doesn't serve Hashem, but he's for sure not a Rasha.
So he's defining serving Hashem is fighting your Yetzirah.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And what is this person doing? Why is he not a Rasha? Ki loy avar miyam v'shuma verakala, because he never transgressed any, even the smallest infraction his whole life. V'gam kaim kol mitzvah shoshul l'kaimim, and he has always doing the right thing all the time. V'talmud Torah keneged kulam v'lo pasukumim megirsa, and he never wastes a moment of time, he never stops learning Torah. This is the Beinoni. Ela she'eina oisa shum l'chamim ha'yetzir. But what? He's not fighting. For him, his nefesh or Bahamas is not bothering him. Is it there? B'takva v'gvurasa kiltaldasi. It's the strength and its might like the day you was born. But what? It's really kind of hard to think two things simultaneously. And if this guy, this Beinoni, is just like so in the groove that he's not wasting a moment of time. And he's walking from here to there, and he's got his mind involved with thinking in Torah, and he's connected. So it's for him, this person, it's kind of tough for him to start thinking about other things.
Right.
It's just there's no room in his brain to be thinking about it. So he's not bothered by his Yetzer Hara.
He hasn't conquered it, he's just not bothered by it.
I would say he's conquered
it. That was a question, not a...
I understand. I would say, well, he said he's not waging a war. Now, what does it mean he's not waging a war? I guess he's ignored it enough that it's gone away by itself.
But
he's still here.
It's like... You ever wrestled when you were in school?
Yeah.
You ever had the guy pinned to the point where he... Didn't matter how he struggled, he couldn't move.
I wish. But
okay.
Yes.
If you had the guy pinned, okay.
Yes.
I used to wrestle a little bit. If you were same weight class approximately, if you actually had the guy pinned and you had the upper hand, even if he struggled, he still couldn't move.
Right.
And your effort was almost nil because he was pinned.
Uh-huh.
Now, if he had any leverage point, you were history. But if you had the leverage point, it was almost no effort. And in this case, if you've constantly got the leverage point, there's no resistance.
Right.
There's no counter resistance.
Good example.
Okay. No counter resistance.
Okay. The fight's going on, but it's not much of a fight as far as he's concerned. He's not exerting himself. That's what makes him an Aino Evidel.
He's not losing.
He's definitely not losing. No,
he's not fighting.
He's not fighting.
He's overcome to the point where the guy can't. Where the Yetzer Hara.
He's not even fighting.
But
hasn't conquered it. It just can't.
That's what I'm having trouble.
Has
right.
no
and
leverage.
I don't know why.
Has no leverage against it.
It's not clicking yet.
Because he's constantly.
Because the Yetzer Hara is not going away. It's just that he has such a strong upper hand.
Right.
So it's like a stalemate almost, maybe.
No. He's got the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yetzer Hara has no dominion whatsoever in his conscious. But he's not really exerting any effort.
Okay.
Okay, let me give you a couple of examples.
Okay.
He is not exerting any effort. There's no war with his Yetzer to dominate, to conquer it. Because of the light. What's the reason why? It's because of the light of Hashem, which is shining in his godly soul.
Right, right, right.
Okay, it'd be like wrestling with a 2-year-old.
Right.
Okay.
Hey, a win's a win.
All right, Lance.
Right. Shiva Maya Hashalat Alev, because he's got that Maya Hashalat Alev down.
Right.
He's got his brain is controlling his heart, no problem.
Yeah.
Because his Yetzer Hara is not standing up against him. The answer lil chaim imay klal, and he doesn't have to wage war with the Yetzer Hara at all. Kigon, for example, shehu masmi b'limud b'teva mitaldasi. If a guy was a bookworm, and what does this guy like to do?
He likes to study.
To sit and to learn.
Right.
Where does that come from? It's just his nature.
Right.
This is what he likes to do. Sports doesn't turn him on. You know, other things, other hobbies and avocations. He's happy. He's fine. You know, give me a Torah book. Leave me alone. I'm good. Okay? He's got the zitzlesh for it. He's got the head for it. Al yedeit hisgaver samar shkayer. And it sounds like it's almost a negative thing. Because he says this is because of the domination of what he quotes here, the black gall, which is talked about in... Medieval Jewish writings that the gallbladder is the source of depression.
Okay,
being that bile is very bitter.
Right.
Okay, and so the person's got like too much bile in their system, so they get depressed. This, of course, I don't know. I'm going to say this, of course, but I don't know if it's ever been any kind of correlation between bile levels and depression, physiologically speaking. But this person's gallbladder is working overtime, so it's got him such that he just doesn't have to get up and go. He wants he's not into physical movement and exerting himself. So he's got, I'll sit here and I'll learn. That's what his nature is.
Hmm.
And so too also, women just don't turn him on. Because he's a cold guy. He's not into the whole thing. You know, it doesn't, you know, And so too also with other pleasures of the world. He just doesn't see how they're pleasurable. Because it's a natural thing. Right. Now, is it? I mean, how can you understand? That was, for me, is an easy one to understand. Because I can't understand how somebody would enjoy smoking a cigar. To me, it just doesn't make any sense to be sucking on the back end of a very large burning weed. You know, it doesn't, I learn with guys. Well,
burning weed's a whole separate discussion. Yeah, right?
Yeah, well, that's what tobacco is. It's nothing more than a weed. No, this is a big thing over here. Yeah. And I learn with guys who are real aficionados, yeah. And I've been the beneficiary of their indulgence, their kindnesses over here, and they take out these things that the size of my forearm that they have gone to all the trouble to get. And they tell me that this thing costs
or something.
Yeah, you know, this thing costs more than what I would pay for supper in a decent restaurant.
Right.
And they do a whole thing over there. There's a whole ceremony to give the thing a bris, and they stab it at the other end.
Yeah.
And then you light the thing up, and you sit there and you smoke the thing, and you know, just like, you know. And he says, you just inhale it, and you walk the smoke. In the meantime, I'm getting a headache. I'm turning green. Yeah, I'm losing my cookies on the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
My entire outfit reeks from it.
And
these guys are having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
And Cigar Aficionado is one of the most expensive magazines there is.
Right.
You know, so.
Yes, breathe smoke in, blow smoke out. Great.
It's not, you know, so... So with this, I can understand that there must be people who just not into, if I don't like cigars, so there must be people who don't like, are not into the whole eating thing or into the whole whatever, fill in the pleasurable thing. It's their thing. They just don't get it.
Cup of tea, right.
You know, some people tell me about scotch, they're into single malt, they're not into, to them it tastes like iodine. I mean, you know, so. So since this is his nature, he's naturally this way.
Right.
So he's almost like a tzaddik in the fact that he was born this way. This is his nature by birth.
Right.
He hasn't changed himself. He's not working on himself.
Right.
His nature is do the right thing all the time. So therefore, he doesn't have to think about the greatness of Hashem all the time. He's not sitting and constantly meditating on the things that are described in chapter 3, how Hashem fills all the worlds and encompasses all the worlds, and how compared to Hashem all the worlds are like nothing. He's there already, because that's supposed to arouse a fear and love of Hashem. And he's got the fear and love of Hashem already.
Right.
Is this the level that women are at?
You'd have to ask them.
I mean, you know how they're supposed to be closer to Hashem in that sense, like they don't have to do the same.
Well, I'm not going to say that every woman's on the level of being a Beinoni, but you might say that in some reason, some areas, because of their what's referred to as Bina Yisira, their extra intuition on in spirituality,
right?
It may be easier for them in certain ways.
So they don't have to always contemplate it. We have to always be studying and learning and constantly, and women are just kind of like more.
Yeah, but like I say, the amount of women Beinoni are probably just as much as the amount of men Beinoni.
Okay.
Beinonim.
Yes.
Okay, and they have their own Yetzirahs.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, so, but women have a greater intuitiveness to things spiritual.
Mm-hmm. So they're not always happening to.
Yeah, I mean, there's a din. And if a couple gets married with no preconditions, and the husband says, I want to move to Israel. And she says, I don't want to move to Israel. Says, they don't have to do that. Whoops, I went back to zero.
We're going
here it goes.
Okay. Anyway, they don't move to Israel. But if she wants to move to Israel, we compel him to move to Israel. Because there's this, natural affinity towards things spiritual that women have more than men.
Okay.
So why would you not allow them to go if both of them want to?
Well, if they both want to go, then there's no problem. It's if one of them does, one of them doesn't.
Oh, Because I thought you said
it's basically, first, it's basically you said she doesn't. It's basically it's her decision.
Uh huh. I thought you said the first decision they both.
He wants to, and she doesn't.
Ah, but if she wants to and he doesn't, he should get up and go.
Get up and go.
Uh huh. Okay, fine.
Okay. So he doesn't have to meditate so much in the great greatness of Hashem. That he has to suddenly feel this connection. Das is translated as connection. Mm. We know das is knowledge, but knowledge means to be connected. Right. To have a fear of Hashem in his brain. To guard himself from transgressing any of the negative commandments. He doesn't have to have his guard up all the time. As the person who is an Eved Hashem, or the person who's trying to work on themselves, they always constantly have their guard up, and saying, no, I don't want that. Or this guy doesn't even have to say, no, I don't want that. It's a situation that's just not presenting himself. It's not, it never enters in his mind even to want it even, because he's too busy doing other things. The Avas Hashem b'libay ledavka by b'kiyumis is v'talmud Torah k'neged kulam, and he doesn't need to arouse the love that he has for Hashem to propel him to do mitzvahs, because he's got that already, and with the study of Torah waiting equal to all of them. Eladai loy ba'avu misiteres asher b'lev kolus Yisrael, but it's enough for him to suffice it with the hidden love which is in the heart of every single Jew. Shenikrei Oyvei Shemai, who are called the lovers of Hashem's name. He's going to talk more about this in chapter 18 and 19. Mm-hmm. This idea of this natural love that in our DNA codes, in the DNA code of a Jew, somewhere on one of the chromosomes is inscribed love of Hashem. And the second section of the Tanya, starts in chapter 18, focuses on how do I go bringing about to the forefront and in the conscious that love of Hashem, which is innate within me. Stay tuned. Okay, so this guy's working on autopilot. He's not a tzaddik because he doesn't despise evil. He's not totally and completely in love with Hashem at an ultimate level. There is room in his heart for other things besides godliness, but it never occurs to him to act on them, to even want them. That's why he's not called a servant. Because bringing out what's already there within you is not an avodah. It's a discovery. Hey, look what I got. You always had it.
Right.
And he'll talk about it. So that's not called work. Work is, I never really had this. I wasn't able to do this. But I worked on myself such that I'm now able to do it. Okay? So you have a guy, for example, who can't bench press 250 pounds. And so he starts with 50 pounds and then 100 pounds and works his way up to 250 pounds. So he worked on himself to be able to bench press 250 pounds. Then you get the guy who's built like an ox, who lies down without even thinking about it, says, oh, let's see, we'll start at 250. Okay, so he's there. They're in the same place. It's just this one had to work on himself to get there, and this one didn't have to work on himself. We're using a lot of sports analogies tonight. Elohu Yerushathenim Avesena Leklal Yisrael Kamoshav Adam Lekamen. This love is an inheritance to us from our forefathers, that they bequeathed it to every single Jew. When you say that Avraham is our forefather, so when you say, okay, so Avraham's my forefather, where's my inheritance? So your inheritance is, what did Avraham bequeath to us? And you can talk about this again in chapter 18 and 19 and later. Avraham bequeathed to us a natural love and fear, an affinity towards godliness, and a repulsion of things which are in opposition to godliness. That's natural within us. Now we have our definitions. We have a tzaddik. What's a tzaddik? It's a person who has converted his nefesh habahamas to a nefesh elokis. What's a Rasha? He doesn't even need to define that one. We got that one good. That's easy. Okay? An Eved HaElokim is a Beinoni who's in the middle of a constant war with his Yetzer Hara, constantly controlling it, constantly exerting effort, so as to squash the desires of the Nefesh of Bahamas so that it doesn't come into his conscious at all in thought, speech, and action. And then you have an Eina Eved HaElokim, who is another level of Beinoni, who's not serving Hashem, because naturally by him, he's there already that his Yetzer Hara is not bothering him. Okay? But he still has a Yetzer Hara.
Yeah.
So now, that's not the end of the chapter, though.
Fair enough.
V'kein af misha einu masmi bilimud betivai. And so too also. With his top of the page, he talked about somebody who is naturally a scholar. He's got the zitzvah, she was born with it. What does he do? Nothing more interests him than sitting and learning. Okay? So you got this guy who doesn't have such zitzvah. He's not so inclined to just be sitting and learning. But what happened is he trained himself. Because the good thing about an animal is, generally speaking, animals, you can train them.
Right.
You domesticate them. You get them to do what you want. And then if you get them to do it real well, everybody applauds and says, yeah, look what this guy did. Mm. You know, look at that cute animal doing those things that it's doing. Nice tricks.
Yes.
So what are we doing is we're getting our animal soul to do this trick of sitting down and learning. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's like the monkey in the little organ grinder suit. That's basically what we are. We're imitating.
Yes.
Okay? We see, oh, this guy's sitting and learning. You know what? I'm going to sit and learn too.
Yeah.
Like monkeys. So he works on himself, so that becomes sort of like second nature. V'nasa hergelo tevel sheni. It becomes him second nature. V'dai loy ba'avim usuteris zu. And it's therefore, it's enough for him to suffice it with his natural love. Okay, so he's gotten to the point where he's sitting and learning, and he's too busy to be thinking about anything else, and he doesn't have the desires of the world coming in and on him. So it's enough for him that he has this natural love of Hashem, which is propelling him through his day. Elaim Cain, unless writes a little mod Yosemarigalgilosai. Unless he wants to learn more than he normally does. For example, Zayuv and Mashakasa Vigamara, it says in the Gemara, the Eved HaElokim, a person who serves God is Mishashina Perka Meyapami. Vachad. Is a person who's a servant of God, is a person who learns the less than 101 times. Veloy Avdu Haina Mishashina Perka Meyapami Levad. And a person who's called not a servant of Hashem is a person who learns it 100 times. Back in the days before writing books down, and printing, etc., were such a common thing, and but even before the Torah Shebal Peh was allowed to be written down, because the Torah Shebal Peh was not allowed to be written down until Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi came and wrote it down, and that's only like 1800 years ago. So then they had to learn things by heart.
Yep.
And how do you learn something by heart? You keep repeating it.
Over and over and over.
Correct. And so they learn things. Normal thing is, what are we going to do? We're going to learn this lesson today 100 times. That's why you can understand, if they have to learn everything 100 times, that generally scholars were well to do. Because if you got to sit there and learn each lesson 100 times, how are you going to make a living? You know, it's going to take a long time before you've covered any type of ground.
Right.
You're going to review stuff 100 times. Okay? What does reviewing something 100 times do? Israel, you're an American, right?
Yeah.
Born and bred yeah. in America. Born and raised in America?
Yes.
When was the last time you said the Pledge of Allegiance?
Third grade.
Okay. Could you say for me now, please, the Pledge of Allegiance? Go ahead.
The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Yeah. Of the United States of America, to the Republic which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible.
With
liberty and justice for all.
There you go, liberty. Yeah, you haven't said it in third grade, okay? But because you said it 100 times before that, so it's yours. You can't take it away from you.
That's just the last time I said it regularly, so.
Yeah, okay. Right, you got it. I mean, it's been more than a week since you said it last, you know.
For sure, sure. And maybe some basketball game or something.
No, they sing the Star Spangled Banner, but they
don't. Oh, that's right.
I don't remember the last time when I was asked to say the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, so.
I don't even know if they're allowed to say it anymore.
Well, they take out the under God, so.
Well, it's no longer a republic either.
It was like California or something. Like an atheist sued the school district
because
they found it offensive.
Okay. Anyway.
Good idea.
Anyway.
Anyway, so that's just to prove the point. That's what it does.
Hmm.
You learn your lesson in such a way, you've got it. Because what did Moshe want to ensure? Moshe wanted to ensure.
Go ahead.
Continuity. Such that the Torah Shebal Peh that we have today, 3,300 years after Har Sinai, is exactly the same Torah Shebal Peh that Moshe was teaching in the Midbar. And so they set up this system where people were the carriers on right. of the Torah. And always in every generation there were people who knew the entire Torah, who were like the authorities. And they knew it as well, I don't say maybe as well as Moshe, but they knew what Moshe knew, was whatever Moshe passed on, they knew. That's why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi decided he's going to write it down, because they're going to have problems with lack of communication and persecution, which he saw was going to happen. So he figured, you write it down, it'll be easier to remember. Okay, but remember, the Gemara that we have today is written in such a way so as to facilitate memorization. That's the way it is. And memorizing a piece of Gemara really is not that hard. Okay, especially if it doesn't have, memorizing Gemara doesn't mean word for word. It means memorizing the discussion. Whenever I teach a class to Gemara, especially with littler kids, so I'll say, okay, before we go further, tell me a story. Tell me something, a cow, a donkey, a this, a hole, a pit, you know, a fire, whatever. Tell me what's going on. Mm-hmm. Okay? And they come in, yeah, and there's a this, and then there's a question, and then there's an answer, and a refutation, and a proof. Okay, it's all very logically set up so as to facilitate memorization.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in the times of the Gemara, before this all was written down, so they used to learn it 100 times. So what happens, this guy says, now, if you were to sit down and learn something and say, I'm going to learn this for 100 times, how are you going to feel somewhere around, say, times 65?
Burned out.
I don't want to look at this anymore. I really don't want to look at this anymore.
Yeah.
Okay? So now when you get to 100, you go,
I'm done.
Okay, I'm good. I got it. It's 100 times. I'm going to the next piece. Okay? That's called an Eina Eved Elokim. That's called somebody who's not serving Hashem. Because why is he doing it? He's doing it to learn it. That means he's got his own personal motives involved.
Right.
He's learning it because he wants to know it.
So that 101st time is for Hashem.
The 101st time I'm doing it to show God I want to do it for Hashem. Mm-hmm. That person's called an Eved Hashem.
Hmm.
Okay? That make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Kidiisto Hasan Bigamara. As the Gemara brings up an example. Mashul Mashuk Shal Shachamarim. You're taking an example from the donkey market. Shiniskarim La Eser Parsi Bizuza Alechar Aser Parse Betrezuze. People would hire donkeys. And if you wanted to go 10 parses, it cost you a zuz. Which means, how much is it cost to go one parsa? A tenth of a zuz.
Tenth of a zuz.
Okay.
Right.
Now, if you wanted to go 11 parses, based on that, it should cost you one zuz and a tenth.
Right.
But it costs two zuzim.
Right.
Double. The one extra parsa, which is one tenth more of the trip,
right.
cost 100% more to go that way. Why? Because you're talking about wear and tear on the donkey.
Right.
Okay? Donkeys are used to traveling 10 parses this way and 10 parses back.
Right.
That's normal for the donkey. Okay? See, we're even worried in the Torah, we're worried about how the donkey feels. Mm-hmm. To go that extra mile takes as much effort for the donkey to go that one more mile as it did the whole trip.
Right.
So therefore, the wagon driver, for compensation, wants to get paid, is going to get paid
double. Right.
Because it's more than it's normally accustomed to. So this 101st time that the person's learning is equal to the 100 times. And he says, "Lachin zeis apam amei ava achas." How you see this time is extra 101 times. Is anybody making it him do it? Mm. No. The teacher says 100 times. We're done. Next. This guy says, "Wait, I want to do it one more time myself. I want to make sure. Just give it one for God." Okay. Now it does say there's a story about. Oh, I wish I remembered names. There's a rabbi mentioned in the Gemara who his thing was teaching kids. Mm. And he's credited with having saved the entire Torah. It says that he planted flax and he caught, from the flax he spun nets, and with the nets he caught deer, and from the deer he tanned the hides. And he wrote down the five books of the Chumash and the six books of the Mishnah, and he found 11 kids, and he taught each one a book so that they knew it by heart, and then told each one of them to teach the other kids the book that they had, so that all 11 kids would know all 11 books, etc.
Right.
So that was his thing, was teaching little kids. He says he once had a kid that he tutored who had a head like a brick. And it took him to learn with this kid 400 times before the kid got it. Mm. Okay? So it once happened, he told the kid, "Listen, let's kind of hurry things up a bit. I got an appointment later on." Okay? So he learned with the kid 400 times, and he saw the kid didn't know it. Mm. So he said, "It must be that because you were thinking about how I was going to get out early, that you weren't paying attention." So he said, "Forget about it." And he sat and he learned with the kid another 400 times. Okay?
Poor kid.
I think it was a projection of the parent.
Actually. Yeah.
Would have been better if the kid learned how to be like a diamond cutter or trying to compel the kid to be a scholar. Yes. Yeah. Okay, so therefore this 101st time is that he's learning it. Weighs equal to all the other 100 times. And it's even more, not that it weighs equal, it's more important. The 101st time is even greater than 100 times. Why? Because they tell somebody, "I learned something today 100 times." They look at you and say, "So, is that news?" Everybody does it 100 times. That's what you're supposed to be doing. Okay? He comes, "I learned it 101 times. Ooh, we did it 101 times. There's a special person over here." Mm. So the 101st time is even greater than the first 100 times. Liyais nikra eved Elokim. Because what does the 101st time do? It now puts him in the category of someone who's serving Hashem. And he's not doing it for any of his own motives.
Right.
Because in order for a person to change their nature, it really takes a lot of effort. Because a person has to sit and really focus, meditate in the greatness of Hashem, so that his brain rules over his nature, which is in his left ventricle, left side of his heart, which is the nefesh of Bahamas, which is coming from Klippa. It's an important thing to remember. Here it is, we have the Tanya. And the Tanya, what is he trying to do, is he wants, it says in the title page, that he wants to show us how kikarav elecha hadavr ma'oid v'fichul v'avchol ha'asoso, That's called the Book of the Bainani, and we want people to excel in their thought, speech, and action, and they should be dedicated to Hashem at every minute, all the time. And he comes up with this statement over here. Changing your nature is almost impossible. And don't think that you can, and don't think it's expected of you either. If a person has a certain propensity towards a certain attribute, he can't suddenly change it and become something else. It's not going to happen so fast. Can it? Yeah, if a person really, really, really worked on himself. Like you said, for example, you have a person who gets who's easily angered. And he sees that there are people that things just don't bother them. They just like the, what's this, rolls off their backs.
Right.
Okay? And he wants things to roll off their back, but he's got a Velcro back. So it's not it's not rolling off so fast. Okay? But he wants one of those like marble backs. The thing's just kind of like whoop.
Yeah.
Okay? So what's he going to do? So a situation's going to happen, and he's going to say, well, I'm not supposed to get angry. I will not get angry. I'm not getting angry.
Right.
He's going to wind up with a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
So he's going to wind up with. So that for him to change that type of a thing, it's very hard. So what should he do? He's not saying this over here. It comes up later a little bit. Be angry for Hashem. Pinchas. Ben Elazar, Ben Aaron HaKohen, was a hothead.
Yeah.
He was a bully. You could go so far as maybe even call him a juvenile delinquent, a real ruffian, a thug. And what did he do? He killed two people. Okay? Moshe couldn't pick up that javelin and kill those two people. Aaron couldn't do it. His grandfather couldn't do it.
Right.
They're all running around saying, woe is me, what's going on over here? This guy, you know, this picks up a thing and kills both of them. You know, and didn't even think, why don't you guys kill them? You're not going to, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because that was what his nature was. And what happened to Pinchas? He got to be Kohen Gadol.
Yeah,
he got to be Kohen Gadol. He was...
Other than being Kohen Gadol, nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look in the Rambam, we just started Rambam, within the introduction of the Rambam, it says, who was the successor to Yehoshua and Eliezer? It was Asniel Upinchas Ubeis Dinai. He was the conveyor of the Torah to the next generation.
Yeah.
Okay, did he ever stop being a hothead? Probably not. Did you want to get him mad when he was near a javelin? I wouldn't think so. Okay, but if he was Kohen Gadol, that meant he walked into the Kashya Kedushim and walked out of the Kashya Kedushim. Right. And he did it many years.
Successfully.
Okay, yeah. A lot.
Right.
Okay, so, and then if you take it one step further, and it says in the Zohar, Pinchas Zu Eliyahu, that at some point, Pinchas resigned from being Kohen Gadol, and said, I'm not doing this anymore. I've never seen a medrash that indicates when that was.
Right.
But in Bayis Rishon sometime, which is another 400 years, suddenly you get this guy Eliyahu appearing in sudden, like Eliyahu Atishbi, suddenly appears in chapter 16 of Malachim, Aleph. Okay? And so this is Zohar says, oh, Pinchas becomes Eliyahu.
Right.
Okay, and what was Eliyahu? Eliyahu was also a hothead.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you the key to rain. Finished. He tells God, I'm not giving you the key to rain.
Right.
God says, listen, my children are starving. He says, he tells God, I'm not giving you the key to rain. Sorry. It's not raining as long as I can help it. Okay, it was only through politicking on God's side that he finally got Eliyahu to give the key up to him. Yeah. So the... So he used it for, he used his hot-headedness for Kedusha.
Yes, he did.
The whole Misa with the 400 prophets of Baal.
Yep.
Sitting here making fun of them. Hey, pray louder, maybe your God's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this type of stuff. There's nothing wrong with being a hothead, provided that you can do it for Hashem. Okay? Likewise, also, if a person's like easygoing, so he could be easygoing and never get off the couch. Let him be easygoing for Hashem. fill in the blank.
Right.
Okay. Because changing your nature is really hard. And for the most part, and Verma Lipsky used to say this, for the most part, people haven't changed their nature. You have a guy who was, what are you talking about? I didn't change my nature. What I used to do before I was religious, and I don't do it anymore. Okay, so that's where he used to use the example of the Rambam and the cats that we mentioned last week.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, you're still a cat. You're just walking on your hind legs, pretending you're a waiter.
Exactly.
Okay, which is that's good. That's fine.
Just leave my apron alone, please.
Keep that mouse in that box. It comes from the klippa. That's what a person's nature is. What defines a person's nature? It's not his godly soul, because we all have the same thing. If it be the godly soul, the godly soul wants to pursue godliness. Mm. It wants to 24/7 have nothing to do with anything else except godliness. That's right. Its nature.
Yeah.
So what defines our personality?
It's our animal soul.
And personality is already, you want to say personality, because this discussion is what a person is it affected by, is it genetic or is it environmental? And the answer for the most part is yes.
Just yes.
But there's a lot of it that's already genetic. I've had picked the personalities of some of my kids before they were born already. I had one kid that was such my kvetchy pregnancy. Oh, what this kid put through my wife through for 9 months.
Mm.
Okay? Morning sickness through 8 months, you know, and then after the 8 months, it's just like, you know, here, let me kick you in the ribs a couple of times. Clunk!
A day.
You know? Clunk! You know?
Yeah.
You know, she said, oh, the kid's climbing on the kid's playing on the monkey bars over here. You know? And then as soon as the kid came out, just like, kvetching! The kid's a kvetchy kid. Kid's a catchy adult now.
Works out good.
So we picked it from at birth. Okay, and what's interesting is when I named her, and I told a relative of mine what I had named her. I had named her after another relative who had passed away. So this relative said to me, "What'd you name her after her for? She's such a kvetch." I said, oh, okay.
Indeed, yes.
I didn't pick it. It's her. That's the way she was born. Ayla Aras to Avimus Eterish Abalibay, or to arouse. He doesn't have to work on himself to arouse the. Or wait a minute. We're talking about the. What was the train of thought? Sorry. So this is the 101 time.
Right.
Now, what is he doing? He's arousing the natural love which is in his heart. Limshal al yada al teva shebecholam smali, that he can rule over the nature of his heart because he has now worked on himself that he is by his actions to love Hashem so much that he's not following the desires of his heart. Shizu nikri gam kein avoid alu hilachem im teva yvahyeser. That's also going to be called waging a war. Okay, so what is it now? You have this person who has decided, I want to learn something 101 times. So he says that learning it 101 times is now called a war.
Hmm. Right.
So the obvious question then now becomes, let's say the guy gets to the point where for him, every lesson he learns 101 times. So now his nature is that he learns things 101 times. So does he have to learn it now 102 times?
You would assume.
No.
No?
No. The Ein L'Davar Sof is the expression. There will be no end to that.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And normal is 101, is 100 times. And at any time, when he gets to 100, he could say to himself, I did it 100. I don't have to do it anymore. Normally I do it 101 times. This one I'm only doing 100. But because he doesn't, and he says, this one I'm also going to do 101 times, every time he has to do it 101 times, the 101st time, is a war. Mm. Even though it may seem like less of a war,
right.
But there is nothing that compels him. The 100 times he's compelled to do. You want to pass, you have to do it 100 times. The 101st time, that's his own initiative. Shizunikri gamke valiyachim tova yeser. Al yedei shema'er ha'avim esetera shebaliboy. By the fact that he is at least, it's why is it called a war? Because he's arousing his natural love for Hashem, which is in his heart. Masha'ein kein kishe'ein le'melchama klal. Which is not the case when there's no war at all. Ein avazu mitzad asma nikri avedos haklal. So the love which is inherent in him that he's not bringing to the surface. We all love Hashem. And it's all deep down. So a person can't say, I am serving Hashem because I have this deep down love deep within inside me that I don't even know about.
Yeah, that's not service.
That's not called servant.
Right.
That's sort of like, you call that slacking. But he's going to talk about that in chapter 18.
That's default mode.
To anybody, any questions? Okay. As I always say, if you don't have any questions, it's one of two reasons. Either you understood everything or you didn't understand anything. So,
just this.